is Lois P. Jones, assistant maitre d' at the Poets Cafe. Mark is currently bungee jumping off the cliffs of Dover, so he left me in charge. Joining us today at the cafe is poet Alice Perot.
Voyage out of old skin. Until I had crawled out of the hole, fear lapped at my ankles like old soup. I was sure I would arrive at some distant shore eventually, so I read my maps and sweated feverishly at night. Mornings were better when newsprint seemed new and coffee was reheated. Traffic was an interesting battleground. I had forgotten the old wars. There was never any snow here, and vacant lots full of stones hid wildflowers. No one really cared about the tiny things, so I made my battles huge so they might be real to someone. The sun was so far away, it burned anyway, and people shed bodies as easily as snakes dropped skins. One little note got my attention, and I listened to it for 100 years, but I missed everything else that happened, and a few people were mildly annoyed. Children were loud and woke me up. I decided it was better to play more notes, be amazed at sunflowers, start over, drawing thin lines that would startle someone into the kind of laughter that lasts.
I love that poem.
Thank you.
Alice, welcome to the cafe.
It's great to be here.
You're really a Renaissance woman.
Oh.
I think, when I think of you, a dancer, musician, teacher, poet, you have this diverse background. And I wanted to ask you, how did you come into poetry? Did you start with poetry? Where did it all begin?
Well, I was always interested in many arts when I was a child. I concentrated on music when I was young and dance. Then I concentrated on music. I have a degree from Manhattan School of Music in flute performance. Then I was a bit dissatisfied with my abilities, and I started taking a rhythm class with a man named Jamie Font here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And the rhythm, just doing lots of rhythm exercises, kind of rehabilitated me as a poet. I just started feeling, first I went into dance with it, and then I started writing, and I kind of went back into dance and writing. So there were a lot of things happening at once, I can say.
So did you start reading poetry, or you were writing at an early age? When you say you came back into poetry,
High school I studied, I studied poetry quite a bit and did some writing, but it was quite excruciatingly hard for me at that time. It was easier to sit and play music.
Yeah, so it came in through a rhythm thing.
Yeah.
I think you have a poem about that. Dancing, something about dancing.
Oh, yeah. Running. I have a dancing poem. It's not really dancing, but it could be.
So one of the things I love about your poems is, aside from the natural sense of rhythm, there's a sense of moving from one thing to another. It's like these flashes of images that kind of unveil themselves, They're very whimsical.
Oh, thank you. This poem was actually written as part of a dialogue with Ann Silver, that wonderful poet who passed a few years ago. I can talk more about dialogues later if you'd like, but we would write poems back and forth. Dancing, counting. Putting two and two together, I usually come up with 5 or 7, not knowing evens from odds, still beating in sync with some deep intergalactic number scheme, a mystical marrying of thwits to dorgays or some other lost language of space travel that defeated the speed of light circa 2,040,000,000 ago? Was it Highlands or a measure concocted from the mind of a saint on a planet 3 sorceries from the moon? Dance? Yes, that's what I call those long leaps from asteroid to asteroid, leaving trails of fire. How small we seem now, clasping sweaty palms, feet twitting like tiny sparrows while an instructor squawks. 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, turn.
I love that. Feet twitting like tiny sparrows. You know, I get the sense when I read your poetry that these images just sort of fall down from the sky. I mean, there's nothing contrived about it, which I have to say is a big compliment, because reading a lot of poetry, you know, you kind of go, wow, she really worked hard on this line. You know?
Well, it's true. I don't, I am not noted for editing a lot, although I do get edited. And just recently I wrote a poem, and I surprised myself because I actually rewrote it 7 times, something I hardly ever do. But I was on a plane and I was going somewhere and mm-hmm. I was bored, so I kept rewriting the poem.
And did you get it where you want it?
Yeah, I guess. I didn't bring it today.
Sometimes I find I overwrite, you know, and it's like, okay, there's one word left. It's good now.
Well, I can read a poem that, if you want, that was edited by the GW Review. It appeared in the GW Review, and it was edited, and basically the last 2 words were taken off. So if you'd like, I'll read.
Sure.
And we can have the missing words floating around somewhere in space.
In space at the cafe, maybe we'll put them, you know, use them as pepper and salt somewhere.
This is my son bought this land, and there were these eucalyptus trees. One of the words that was edited, I said eucalyptus, and I was edited to eucalypti, more than one. So I was basically inspired by those trees. Squeezing the last drops of summer, sweet and pungent, like a Chinese sauce savored with watermelon and lime, we gallop down dusty hills, yell at the ocean, claim a stretch of land, 3 acres where eucalypti stand like benevolent brothers. A huge hawk watches from a tall pine, marks us with the eye of the ancient god. We cannot escape. We lie in the arm of the hill, half crazed with sun, drunk with late summer's slow nectar, our mouths open to receive the offering, then slap the hard, dry earth, bold as dancers, daring the bull, we rush away, nimble as acrobats, thin as leaves, we float off, disappear into hot air, descend to drink cool evening moon, full and fat, waiting.
I have to tell you that reminds me, there's some echoes there of a poet that we both know, Russell Salomon.
Oh, yeah, Russell.
Were you in a dialogue with him when you were doing that poem?
No, I dialogued with him back in, the mid-90s or even the 80s. I can't remember when it was.
Speaking of dialogue, we're here at Poets Cafe, KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. And we're in the cafe here with Alice Perrow. And Alice, you had some other pirouettes in that poem, I noticed. There's more dance in your poetry than you think.
Yeah, I guess so.
Talking about dance and poetry, I know that you're a teacher as well. You teach poetry to children.
Yeah, I've been associated with the California Poets in the Schools for about 12 years. And back in 1991, I started with the New York City Ballet Education Department, and they had a poetry project, and that's how I got started with teaching poetry. It was very inspiring and very fun for me. I really loved it, and there was a lot of freedom in the curriculum, and the same with the California Poets in the Schools. They give the poets tremendous freedom in what they do, and it's very holistic. You can use all different art forms in your teaching, and I fully believe it's extremely important for the children to get exposed to the arts at a young age.
How do they start? I mean, where do you begin with a child when you've got a classroom of these kids that are wanting to throw paper balls or, you know, run around the classroom, whatever? How do you get them focused on writing poems?
Well, I have kind of a whole way of teaching. I start by clearing the derivation of the word poetry, which means to make in Greek, pein, to make. So all children have always have made something in their lives. They all have made something, even if it was a cake or some cookies. But they get basically looking at the fact that they can make things. And one of the things that happens to small children when they come to school is they have to leave their creations behind them, kind of. It's a sad thing. In most academic atmospheres, children are not able to create to the degree that they were prior. Like when you see a four-year-old, he's running around making things. He's looking at imaginary things that he's got right in front of him that he can see that are real to him. And when he goes into school, now all of a sudden he has to copy everything and just do what he's told and sit in the chair.
Right. So it's like the imagination is not really valued.
Right.
And that's something that is really pervasive in your poetry. It's like imagination. There's a lot of whimsical characters. Sometimes there's all these different aspects coming in and that you pull in. Can you read something else that might kind of, you know?
All right. Well, here's a character that I created out of just driving and seeing something in a garage sale hanging out on a hanger or something, and then it turned into a skin. And this was published in Carcanet's Poetry Review, and it's called Second Skin. Today, I went out wearing the second skin I had bought at a garage sale on Lake in Mendocino the day before yesterday. I had long given up my bumper sticker, I break for garage sales, but this time I had to stop. There it was, hanging out on a wire coat hanger like a long silk negligee, flapping in the warm breeze, unnamed, unclaimed. I got a hint of nude with a passing glint of now or never, shining in invisible ink. I wasn't looking for a new start or even something exciting. My life had settled comfortably into a repetitive pattern. Drive, work, pay the bills, drive, work, dreams held back by calluses. I admit this time I succumbed to temptation. It's true, this skin was used with scars and tears to prove it, but it has a way of waving at strangers, getting me to crack jokes I had forgotten, and it's already made me late for work. I may just have to change back before dark.
That's great. Is that from Thought Stars, your book? Or
no, that was a poem written many years after Thought Stars. Thought Stars came out in 1999, and I've been doing a lot of writing since.
That's a great book. How can people get a hold of that book, by the way, if they want to?
Well, it is available on Amazon, so I would suggest that, or Village Books. Go to Village Books.
Village Books, yes, we'll talk about Village Books a little bit. And if people want to reach you and contact you about your poetry or your poems or your
thoughts. Through my agent, of course. I am available. You can write me at pero@earthlink.net.
Excellent. Yeah, I've been perusing this book for some time now, and there's always surprises in here. Kenneth Koch said your book has clarity and surprises. And I'd say that surprise is kind of your middle name in poetry. You know, this is something I've noticed. I've seen a few of your videos on YouTube as well.
Yeah, I do have some up there. If anyone would like to go, just go to YouTube and type my name in, AliceePero.
And so what do you have up in the kitchen for us to read next?
Oh, in the kitchen. Okay. She glanced over and saw I had this. This is Poem to Eat.
Yum. Let's have it.
And I have to tell you that it was just published in Return from Beyond the Valley of the Contemporary Poets Anthology. So there's some great poems in that anthology, so that's a plug for that. Better to bite into a poem. It's firm flesh, crisp, just off the barbecue. Never mind the cilantro and chives. The poem is grabbed wiggling on the hook, a little slimy, washed down with a glass of wine, leaves one tingly. Words like the best caviar melt on the tongue, make you want to dance, cut in, tango with the man with flick down jet black hair, sit down to a game of poker, smug with your poem face, never letting on that you never studied villanelle or tonka, slipping out a brilliant haiku from one corner of your mouth, a cigarette dangling from the other. If you commit a crime after eating a poem, you have the perfect alibi. You were under the influence, poem-driven, crazed by suspension of disbelief, nibbling at manic crumbs left by poets far more culpable than yourself.
That's delicious. I think we're going to have that pinned up in the cafe here as our kind of poster poem for Cafe.
Oh,
Poets
well,
Cafe.
Yeah, they
By the
may,
way, you've
yeah.
been listening to Poets Cafe at 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. And we're here having a delicious treat of haiku stew with poet Alice Perro. What were you going to say, Alice?
No, it was just that, in fact, Rick Lupert always makes a poster out of the poems when people are featured at his
like
venue.
A broadside.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful work of art, and everyone gets one, so it's very nice.
I haven't met Rick Lupert. I see his name everywhere on the poetry superhighway of the world.
Yeah.
There's a lot of...
he's very funny.
Yeah. Dry.
Yeah.
Dry, that wonderful dry humor he has.
I have another poem with... I don't know if you want me to do dialogues now, but I have this one with Russell here. I just found it.
Let us dip into dialogue.
Okay.
For a moment. Briefly, what is the premise of a dialogue poem?
Well, it's a way for poets to sort of bounce off of each other as artists, just as jazz musicians like riff off each other.
Yeah.
And you write a poem, you send it to another poet, they write a poem and send it back to you, and then you keep writing that way back and forth. And I've dialogued with at least 26 poets over the last 20-odd
wow.
years. But some of them are group poems where one writes and then sends to another member of the group, and it goes
kind of
that
like
way.
An orgy, sort of group sex.
Yeah. Well, you definitely get very high from it.
Yeah, but there's that dance theme again, you know. It's just like a tango. I would imagine each partner has their own kind of rhythm, and you sort of tap into that rhythm.
Yeah, it's a great way to learn other styles. I mean, I've noticed that my poems are in many different... I mean, it's hard for me to find one type of poem because I seem to go all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to learn from other poets.
You're here at the Poets Cafe listening to poet Alice Perro at KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara.
So this poem, the first poem, is by Russell Solomon, and this was part of a dialogue I did with him. Marmalade. I got greedy. I kept plucking the ripe moon from branches until my pockets were full. I walked to the car, leaking moonlight through my pants legs. At home, in a large pot, I cooked them down to a luminous marmalade. I have it in jars on a pantry shelf. On toast, moonlight and rose petals go well with black coffee and fried green tomatoes. And then I responded to this, and actually this poem that I responded with ended up in Thawed Stars. And I think this poem that he just wrote was also just published in The Return from Beyond the Valley of the Contemporary Poets.
Ah.
These poems get plucked out of their dialogues and published. It's kind of funny. Moon Marmalade. Buckets of moon marmalade smother me. I wish to grease the sky, fat of duck, crisp of pig. Sugar moon holds me captive. I eye oily chips, think of ways to slick the table with a belly-dancing feast. I gasp for air in sweet moon essence. Laughing angels swoop in hordes. I hide from whirlwinds of translucent beating wings. I dream of ways to deep fry dazzling wingtip fritters, roll in saturated fat from derelict roly-poly angels, slip moon glow into fairy grease.
I think we're going to get a rush of hungry listeners out there. They're going to come into the cafe and want to eat your poems.
Well, we are in
very
a cafe.
Tasty. Very, very
tasty. You have to have coffee and fritters from angel wings.
It's an interesting thing because there's so many ways to create a poem. And sometimes we don't know where our inspiration is going to come from. But you have this other person. Suddenly you have like a terminal out there who is able to receive what you're saying and then originate something. And it keeps this kind of a continuum going as opposed to, I'm going to write a poem about blah, you know.
Yeah,
I think that's interesting.
It's a whole universe that you have over there on the other side.
And how many years did you say you've been doing that?
Well, there's a guy in New York named Bob Hart that I've been dialoguing with for maybe 15, 17 years.
Wow.
I can't remember the number.
And he doesn't have email, right?
No, it's snail mail with him. But he's
patient.
Yeah, he's very fast, though. Faster than some of the other poets who are on computers, believe it or not.
Yeah, I have a friend, as you know, he's finally got a computer now, Peter Ludwin.
Mm-hmm.
But he was, for years and years and years, I think he just got a computer about 6 months ago. He was typing everything out in his old Smith Corona, you know, and you get these beautiful letters with these little missing marks, you know, how they can be from the typeset. And you kind of savor them, you know.
Yeah.
Because people just don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
So we're winding down. We've got about 6 minutes left.
Wow.
What else would you, it moves fast here.
Yeah.
Would you like to
read some more poems from
Thought Stars? Give us something for dessert?
Thought Stars, maybe.
We have Thought Stars for dessert with a little chocolate sauce on the side.
Well, I have a kind of a beef with the concept that when you go to movies nowadays or just life in general, it's so much noisier and louder than it used to be. And you can't even go to a movie without it being on a huge screen with enormous effects that, you know, it gets to the point where I wonder whether people can have this idea of even grasp a small effect of something. So I wrote this poem called This Isn't Enough. This isn't enough. It won't hold your attention. There are no explosions, flashing lights, dynamite, mad, mad dances. This poem is only the fall wind, fall passing in the air through lips scarcely there, hope in a shadow, a window reflection of you, a small breath, a faint reminder of the complexion you had in summer, a faded painting, a yawn at supper, old folks' banter before the long sleep. This isn't enough to wake them.
That's beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, I brought that to the attention of some young high school students I was teaching. I asked them, you know, what they thought of the fact that things were so loud and now, you know, and they got it, you know. They thought it was kind of a neat concept that somebody was bringing up. And, this is a poem. I just want to preface this. When I teach children, older children, in high school, I usually start by asking them what makes poetry itself. And eventually they come up with its rhythm. And then I read this poem just in rhythm without the words, and they get it.
Cool.
Breathless. I am breathless to you, nothing to you. I will make a mountain for you. I am open to you. Nothing to you is a barrier. Waste some green space with me. Hop with new feet to me. Turning backwards is a track I find distasteful. Let's begin again. I make birds sing. You can face me. Nothing is me. Everything.
Mm. It's interesting, you know, the way we do try and fill our lives with so much noise. I find that particularly, you know, when you go, like you're talking about in the movies, or you go into the like a restaurant and you're inundated with music or something, it's if we can't have that quiet time to just have the space be what we want. Is there another quickie you want to get
well,
in there?
Well, here's a poem, Sunflowers. I guess it kind of is about making an effect on someone with a poem. Pulling myself up and condensing myself to a point, I threw an explosion of sunflowers into you waking up over there, yawning. The yawn smile just wide enough to receive my brilliant display.
Thank you for filling the space with your grace and your poetry and your wonderful edible words, Alice Perrow. You've been listening to Poets Cafe, and I'm Lois P. Jones, filling in for M.C. Bruce. And our guest today has been Alice Perrow. Alice, how can people reach you?
Well, I do have a website. It's aliceperrow.com or just PERO@earthlink.net.
Thank you for sharing your work. And if you'd like to contact us, it's poetscafe@kpfk.org. And thanks to our omnipotent producer, Marlena Bond, you've been listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, and streaming live worldwide on the web at kpfk.org, Pacifica Radio, for all of Southern California and beyond.